Blog Talk Radio.
Dr. John Stamey, and I want to welcome everyone to ScaryCast. As usual, we got a really great show. We got a lot of fun stuff. We are coming to you live from Wilmington, North Carolina these days. And I love Wilmington, except I found out if you live in Myrtle Beach, you don't have sinus problems. If you live in Wilmington, well, I'm like in a rainforest up here. But other than that, it's great to be here. We've had a lot of new friends, having a lot of fun, and so we are just very glad to have everybody here with us. First of all, our co-host from the Midlands of South Carolina, the Surgeon General of ScaryCast, and one of my favorite people to talk to, Dr. Trey Dunaway. How are you doing tonight, Trey?
Hey, John, I'm doing good. I'm glad I could make it. It was a close-run thing, but I'm on with you.
Well, thank you. We are glad to have you here. And from Augusta, Georgia, a spooky town in its own right, the one and only Chris Chastain. How are you doing, Chris?
John, I'm doing great. Like I say every week, it is my favorite night of the week, Monday nights.
About 8 o'clock, it becomes my favorite night of the week, too. I'll tell you that, because we're getting close to ScaryCast. Anyway, we're glad you're here.
That's right.
And we're glad Dr. Trey is here. Robin has a hall pass. She is busy on a project, and we're thrilled that she is. So, Robin, we miss you, but we're still thinking about you and glad you're the queen of ScaryCast. So now,
I guess
tonight
we'll allow it.
Yes, we will. That's right. She has a hall pass. And tonight, we have one of my favorite guests. He's come back because he's just so enjoyable. He's got so many great paranormal stories. And I've known him for, I guess, about a year, year and a half. And just he never stops amazing me. And I am, and now I'm going to take the opportunity to take the accept your invitation to come to Clarksville, Tennessee this summer. We got to go hang out at Land Between the Lakes. The one and only Elijah Henderson. How are you doing tonight, Elijah?
John, I'm doing well, brother. And by the way, I just got to say, I love that intro music. That was awesome, man.
Oh, thank you. It's real interesting. Guy did it. He did a great job, and I think he may have expired. I think he may have died on me because I can't find either arrow.
Oh, no, that's terrible.
I know. At least he completed his best work for ScaryCast, and we're so glad he did. So tonight, Elijah, we're gonna talk about growing up haunted, which has become truly one of my favorite topics. We even have a special show on Thursday nights for Growing Up Haunted, with Tyler Smith and Ryan Trembley of Monster Radio. But I wanted you on here because we have the likes of Robin McCrae and we have the likes of Dr. Trey Dunaway. And I like for Trey to be around for these things because he has so much practical knowledge in the medical world. I just think it's great to have him here on ScaryCast doing and Growing Up Haunted. And by the way, Dr. Trey and Chris, next week we are going to have the Attorney General of Scarycast, Marshall Biddle, is going to be back with us. I'm going to go to his parents' house, and I'm going to take pictures, and we're going to talk more about that famous ghost that appeared in his room every night. So Marshall will be with us, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Marshall likes to come on this show. So anyway, Elijah, I'm going to get started with you. Tell us a little. You grew up in an interesting household. Your parents were truly famous, well-known, and well-respected paranormal adventurers and explorers. So tell us a little bit about how it was in the sense of growing up haunted with all of that magnificent research and those wonderful minds and those adventurous spirits that you got to grow up with. Tell us about that.
Well, I guess I should kind of briefly connect to how we got involved into it. I won't tell the whole story because we've talked about that many times. But just to, you know, summarize it real short, we had a experience in a place called Werewolf Springs in Burns, Tennessee. Something howled as the train was going by along the train tracks along the backside of the park called Montgomery Bell State Park. And something howled at it in response. And whatever it was so loud that it would rattle and shake in your chest. It would just vibrate entirely through you. It was absolutely terrifying. And you could tell hearing it that it was something unnatural. It wasn't a normal animal of some kind. But we had that happen to us, and we got into a group called Chattahoochee Bigfoot Research Organization, and they did a lot of work with Miss Mary Green over in East Tennessee, over in Overton County, I believe, in a park called Standing Stone State Park. And every year they'd have these annual outings over there where, you know, everybody would come together. They'd swap Bigfoot stories, and they'd actually get out in the field and go to a few places. Now, at that point, I was a real little boy, and I was terrified of Bigfoot at the time because of what happened in Werewolf Springs. And as I got older, you know, I kind of got used to it and whatnot and can't keep me out of the woods anymore. However, it was those Bigfoot outings that really got us in the field involved with that type of research. And to touch on your name, Growing Up Haunted, me and my family have always kind of had supernatural things happen, not so much in my lifetime, but to my family that has passed on, you know, and whatnot. There's been plenty of stories of spooks and specters that have been passed down from family member to family member. And even my dad and maybe my mom, but absolutely my dad, got to experience some of that supernatural stuff. Now, this transpired before I was alive. It was, I believe, 1993 or 94. No, probably 92 or 93. My dad lived with my grandma up in an apartment about 7 minutes from where I currently live. And he lived in an apartment called J10. Now, that was around the time him and my mom met. You know, they were still dating. They hadn't gotten married yet. They moved into this apartment, and, you know, first they lived in it for a while without having anything strange happen to them. But at some point, they started having a lot of strange things happen to them in that apartment. My dad ordered a pizza one night, you know, got the knock on the door, and the pizza guy's there, open up the door, and my dad described that a wind blew from the inside of the apartment. It blew and hit the door and slammed it shut, and the pizza guy actually had to jump out of the way to avoid getting hit by this door. But this wind blew from inside of the apartment toward the outside, and, you know, that was really strange. But things kept progressing from that point until it just kind of got more of a malevolent feeling in the apartment. Him, my mom, my grandma, and I think maybe my aunt, I'm not sure, they had planned to go out of town for a trip, and they'd bought a package of, you know, pre-cut sandwich bologna meat, and they had it in the refrigerator. Well, night or so before the trip, they stick it in the fridge. Next morning they go and look at it, and something had taken it out of the fridge, pulled open the package, bit through all the plastic strings around the edges of the meat, bit through the whole thing, left a big old bite in the whole stack of meat, put it back in the package and back in the fridge. Obviously, no person did that, and that you know, really threw them for the loop. On another occasion, they found what looked like a thumbprint that was pushed right into the ceiling. Nobody done that. And the strangest things that happened there was one night my dad went to bed, and you know, he's laying in his bed, and he felt somebody sit down in the bed with him and start rubbing his chest hair. And he thought it was my mom, April Henderson. And then he realized, wait a minute, April went home a few hours ago. And he jumped out of bed, started running for the light switch. And he said that he was bumping into something all the way toward the light switch. He was bumping into something or somebody all the way toward that light switch. Flipped the switch, nobody there. Empty apartment. Just him. And on another occasion, he was back in the bed. Woke up in the middle of the night, and he seen this black shape standing at the foot of his bed. And I believe he told me that it had kind of a conical head shape. I think he told me that, but either way, he was a bit of a roughhouser at the time, you know, growing up. Liked to get into fights and whatnot at an early age. And he seen this figure standing at the foot of his bed, and he thought, oh, man, somebody's robbing me. Well, I'm not just gonna give up. I'm going to go out fighting. So he dove out of the bed at this thing, and he ate the floor. Nobody there. And they kept having, you know, just kind of unusual things happen. He had a goldfish that came up missing, and then they found it somewhere in the apartment. Looked like it had been stuck in the oven, just dried up. And perhaps the most frightening thing that ever happened there happened actually to my aunt. Everybody else had gone to bed, and my aunt was up watching a Three Stooges marathon, and they'd had, you know, had it taping at the time, taping the marathon. She said that something grabbed her, held her down to the floor, and started biting her arms and legs, and it started telling her it was going to get her, but it was biting her on her arms and legs. And I have some memory of them saying she could see, like, the teeth marks appearing in her arms and legs, but don't quote me on that. And she told the rest of the family everything that happened, and they rewound the tape and found that right at the point where she said everything happened, the Three Stooges marathon just went to static. So she at least had an alibi. And probably the last thing that ever happened to them in that apartment was, you know, they'd had enough and they're moving out. They said that when they're packing their things up and leaving, they looked upstairs toward the window, and they could see a black shape standing there watching them leave. And I guess that was the last thing that they ever had happen there. But that would be some of the early supernatural things, some of the earlier supernatural things that would happen with my family. And, you know, around that time, my family really got heavy into Christianity and got into the church. And a lot of that stuff died down, never really had a whole lot of things like that happen again. You know, just became good God-fearing people, and God keeps the devil at bay, you know what I mean? There is one thing that happened when I was a little boy, which we always thought was kind of strange, never really had a good answer for. It's just one of those weird things out of nowhere. When me and my sister were real little kids, you know, we'd sleep in the same bed as our parents. They had this, I've been a king-size mattress, but I digress. We're all sleeping in the bed, you know, middle of the night. My parents heard somebody gagging and sounded like they were about to throw up. And they thought, oh, man, one of the kids is getting sick. And they felt something wet hit all over the bed, you know. Turned on the lights. We were still asleep, you know, comfortable under the covers, still sacked out. And there was something wet all over the bed and all over us. And they had no idea what could have caused that, because we hadn't woke up and threw up, but clearly they'd heard somebody get sick and throwing up, but it was nobody in that bed. Well, what's kind of funny is they asked my pastor, do you know what that could have been? Could that have been something supernatural? And he said, maybe a bat got in the house. Yeah. But that's some of the earlier stories from when I was growing up, you know, a lot of the supernatural happenings and right before I grew up, before I was even born yet. But, yeah.
Elijah, those are very interesting stories. Yeah, they really are. Especially that apartment. So much stuff happened at that apartment, didn't it?
Quite a bit of stuff happened, and I've called over there in recent years and, you know, tried to chew their ear. Hey, you ever know here if anything of a paranormal nature has ever happened in apartment J10? And they're like, no, nothing that I know of. So since then, it's gotten, you know, a remodel or two, and I pass it all the time, and I'll pass by it, you know, looking up at the windows, like, that's where it happened. But, yeah, as far as I know, it's just a normal apartment these days. Nothing strange to report there.
Wow. Okay, well, I tell you what, I'd like to ask our panel if they've got a question for you. First of all, Dr. Trey Dunaway, you got a question for Elijah?
Elijah, when the luncheon meat was bitten into, was it the shape of a human bite? Was it the shape of a... I wouldn't know what a dog bite looked like unless it was on somebody's arm, but was there a human shape to it? Did it look like a human had taken a bite out of it, or could you tell?
Best as I can remember, I think they said it was kind of more like just looked like a human just took a big old bite out of it, not anything like canine teeth or anything of a more animalistic nature.
It wasn't torn up,
it
was just a bite.
I think it looked more like just a random fella just took a bite out of the strings and the whole thing, slipped it right back in the package and back into the fridge.
Well, that's pretty cool. And when you said that it looked like somebody had vomited in your bed and they could feel something wet, did it look like vomitus? Did it smell like vomitus? Or was it just the sensation of wetness? And when the lights came on, they didn't see anything? What were the details of that, do you know?
Me personally, I don't remember it too well just because I was, you know, so small at the time. I remember them turning the lights on and getting everything changed and whatnot. It seems like my folks said that there was a smell to it, but, you know, us being little kids at the time, getting woke up out of the blue, we're like, what the heck are you doing? Turn the light back off.
Well, if they changed the sheets, then obviously there was something on the sheets that persisted. It wasn't just... felt wet when you turn the lights on, it looked okay. If they change the sheets, you know, that would, to me, that would say there's something there.
You
checked in J10 at some later date. Did you talk to people that actually lived in the apartment or just people that were near it that may or may not know of anything that went on?
I actually just called up at the office and asked them if they'd heard anything. I guess technically I could go up to the door and knock and talk to them personally, whoever lives there.
I tell you, if I was the landlord and I had a haunted apartment, I would say, I never heard anything going on there. I'd want to be able to rent it to the next sucker that signed the lease. Yeah. They. I think that would be filtered pretty well. But, you know, if you pass it every day, just put a note on the door saying, I know this is strange, but... you know, we lived in here and we noticed some weird things going on, and I'd love to hear from you if you've noticed anything strange. And, you know, it would be really interesting to get that corroboration of somebody that currently lives there.
That's a good idea. I may just do that because I've always been curious to know if anything else has ever happened there. But
Tell them you can get them on a podcast called Growing Up, you know, Growing Up Haunted.
Hey, there we go.
Maybe they could come on. You could kind of have a renter's reunion of people in that apartment.
Oh, that'd be
absolutely. Elijah, we'll get them on here. Don't you worry about that. That'd be a lot of fun.
I'll let y'all know if I get any updates there.
Very interesting,
right,
Elijah. And those are pretty wild and crazy stories from your family, and there's no reason they're not out to make a buck off of you. So they were just telling you what what they experienced, which is what we love for people to do on ScaryCast. Just tell us your experience.
In my hometown and my family, I mean, there's a lot more, like, supernatural stories and whatnot and things from the town where my my family comes from. My family comes from over Dayton, Tennessee. It's a small town pretty close to Chattanooga. It's famous for being where the Scopes Monkey Trial took place. And it's still a real small town. There's a lot of nature there. And it's grown a little bit over the years. You know, they got a Walmart up there and a few other things like that. They're slowly picking up in pace. But to a great degree, it's still a real small town, like it stepped out of time. But it's a lush and strange stories. The park ranger up there at Pocket Wilderness, I've got him on film telling me that there's Bigfoot in his park. He's had people approach him and tell him they've seen Sasquatch coming out of the ventilation shaft from the old mine that used to be up in that park. He's had it throw logs and rocks at his truck. Plenty of supernatural stories. There's a place called the Screen Door Restaurant, something like that. But it's got a reputation of being haunted. A whole lot of stuff from that town. It's almost strange. There's even a werewolf story from up there that was in Miss Linda Godfrey's book. Let's see, what was that called? Real Wolfmen, True Stories in Modern America, something like that. Somebody was going up the side of the mountain up toward Pikeville real late in the night, and this woman passed by this person walking alongside of the road, and as she got real close to him, it turned its head toward her, and she said it had a werewolf's head, but it was wearing clothes, and it looked at her. She passed by it, and, you know, I'm sure it startled the heck out of her, and she looked in her mirrors, looked behind her, and it was gone. But in description was almost just like a werewolf. But, yeah, just right on the mountaintop where my family comes from, and such a weird coincidence.
Wow. And I tell you what, now I'm going to ask Chris and Shane have his questions, but first I've got an important question for you that I've never really had answered very well. What is the difference in the look and the persona of a dog man versus a werewolf? Because
That's a tricky question. Well, you could go in some interesting directions there, because in terms of dog men, they've been described in every way, shape, and form. You get some people say it looks like the werewolf from Van Helsing. I've heard it described as like a hyena, like a short-muzzled thing. You got the image that Bart Nunley drew for his artwork of the Beast of LBL, and it's got a completely unique look. Looked like if you literally merged a human and a canine creature, it'd be best for y'all to go look up that picture. I've heard descriptions of dogmen looking like the werewolf from Silver Bullet. What's that? Bad Moon. The Howling. So that they seem to come in a lot of varieties in description. Now, werewolves, I don't hear a whole lot of stories like that. There was a lady that commented on one of my videos that she said she'd seen an honest-to-God werewolf, and I think she described it as looking almost like a canine-ish wild man, like a real hairy wild man that had a canine-ish look to him. And there was a story in one of Miss Linda Godfrey's books about somebody walking right into the middle of a church, transforming into a werewolf. But here's the strange part. Instead of like canine feet, it had cloven hooves. And I haven't read that story personally. I had a friend tell me about it, and I've got the book somewhere. But I'm pretty sure the members of that congregation tackled her, and it started turning back into the lady. Maybe not so much in a transforming sense, but imagine almost like a hologram, like a covering of light. I don't really know how to word that, but hopefully y'all kind of catch what I mean by that.
Well, I certainly do. I certainly understand that, and that seems to be very consistent with certain sightings of cryptids and things like that. So that's certainly a topic for another time. It sounds like a good topic.
You actually could go with the Peter Stube route, too, the old historical werewolf. He was described as just being like a wolf, you know, running around on all fours. So you got another variety there. The old historical werewolves that was mentioned like by Herodotus and whatnot, they were described as literally just like wolves people could turn into. So I'm sure there's a lot of variety there.
Right. And then when you talk about people turning into wolves, you're starting to edge into the legend and lore of the skinwalker. And that's something that we've got our expert Spencer who has been the skinwalker ranch several times through the Indian tribe next door. We're going to actually have him at the North Carolina Bigfoot Conference. It's going to be great having him there and having him answer questions about this legend of the world, because it's fascinating. And there's so much about it that people really do want to know. So we hope everybody will. And a shameless plug for North Carolina Bigfoot Conference, June 17th, Burnsville, North Carolina, at the Burnsville Town Center. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'll be there. Dr. Trey Dunaway will be there. Robin McCray and Pat McCray, will be there. So we're going to have a lot of fun people there, and it's going to be a blast. Ryan Trembley will be there via Facebook to give a talk as well. So it's going to be good. So anyway, look, thanks a lot for giving a little bit of an answer to that question. Chris Chastain, you're on deck now.
Yes, sir. All right. So, Elijah, going back to the things that were happening at the apartment, I've got kind of a two-part question here. But your aunt that had the was pinned to the floor and had the teeth marks going in her, was she severely injured from that? Do you have any kind of additional detail on it?
No, she wasn't injured by it, that as far as I know. And take it with a grain of salt, but I'm pretty sure I remember hearing that when it would bite her, she could see like the image of the teeth like appearing in her skin, like if you're like to bite your arm, you can kind of see the shape of the teeth and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
But as far as I know, it didn't leave any injuries to her. I'm sure it scared the dickens out of her, and she probably wouldn't come back. I don't remember any stories of her coming back. I mean. But it's been a while.
I can't say I'd blame the poor deer. But
no.
So I'm going to go out on a limb. It sounds like that your family has had, you know, experiences with Bigfoot over the years. But a lot of the things you were talking about, like the bite taken out of the deli meat, the thumbprint, the conical head at the end of the bed. Has your family ever considered that there was a Bigfoot that was messing with them in that apartment? Any kind of connection there, or do you think it's something totally different, something maybe of the spiritual realm?
Honest answer is I believe it was something more of a supernatural nature. And I don't want to go into a whole lot of detail of this over the air. John, if you're interested, I'll talk to you more about it over, you know, private talk if you want to, or any of you gentlemen. But not in any current generation, it was like two or three generations back, I have had witches in my family, you know, that could practice things. And when asked by a young, my dad, if they could kill people, they said, yes, I could, but I don't want to go to hell. So, you know, there is that connection in our bloodline of witchcraft, you know, there is that. I've got, if anybody wanted to go this route, you know, I've got Native American in my bloodline, you know, and we've always been fond of like arrowhead hunting and things of that nature. Now, do I believe in ghosts and things of that nature? No, I believe in demons impersonating spirits of the dead, you know, to cause confusion and whatnot. You know,
sure.
I fully believe the Bible describes that death is more like a sleep, because it says, for the living know that they shall die, but the dead know not anything. The dead praise not the Lord, neither any that go down into silence. And there's a lot of verses that describe death as just being like a sleep. So I honestly believe that anything of a supernatural nature that people experience is something of a demonic nature trying to impersonate the dearly departed. And anybody that collects Indian artifacts as heavy as we did, you know, that'd be a perfect way to jumpstart something like that, if I'm making sense. My grandma, she used to walk along the riverbanks and collect arrowheads. And where my family comes from over in Dayton, Tennessee, you know, there was a lot of Native American presence over there. They got Hiwassee Island, which it's a protected island now, but it's covered in artifacts and arrowheads and whatnot. You got a lot of people every year try to sneak out that island and, you know, dig up things and try to find artifacts, and the game warden patrols that island. But when my grandma was young, she would go up and down the river, you know, looking for arrowheads. And she actually got into a grave that had been kind of been washing away on the edge of the bank, and, you know, she could see the bones and whatnot. And when she found that, I think she said that she could hear, like, tribal drums off in the distance when she found it. And even my dad had something kind of similar to that happen, too. It sounded like Native American tribal drums over in, did he say it was? I know there was a pumpkin patch used to cross. I don't know. One of them heard tribal drums like that.
But, wow.
Yeah, interesting places there.
Elijah, those are really great stories. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, they are really part of Tennessee and Kentucky lore. So I want to do a quick station break, and I would like to thank Transamerica Life Insurance Company for keeping us on the air. We couldn't do it without Transamerica. If you need any help with your life insurance, give me a call, Dr. John Stamey. My number is 843-655-8775. Again, 843-655-8775. We'll see what we can do to help you with Transamerica, the company that you're going to keep forever. So anyway, thanks a lot. Now, Elijah, I'm going to switch subjects just a little bit, because you have been talking about growing up haunted, and you are best known for being an explorer of land between the lakes. And I know we've talked about it, but we've got a little bit of a different crowd here as ScaryCast has morphed into an interesting show. And would you tell us a little bit about Land Between the Lakes? How did it get started? What is it? And what's theoretically there?
Okay. So Land Between the Lakes is the largest inland peninsula in America. It's so large it covers part of Kentucky and part of Tennessee, and you can actually drive up the Trace. The Trace is the main road that goes from bottom to top. You drive up the Trace, and at a certain point it'll say, "Welcome to Kentucky." And, you know, Kentucky has the nickname of being the dark and bloody ground. You have a lot of your dogman sightings over in the Kentucky side. But to back up a little bit, it used to be like two rivers that you have Lake Barkley on one side and Lake Kentucky on the other side. They used to be one or two rivers on the sides, and the government, you know, took ownership of the area. They claimed the land, and they flooded the area and made Lake Barkley, Lake Kentucky, both of those, and thus created the largest inland peninsula in America. They drove a lot of people, well, I guess probably everybody, off that property. There was a lot of people living in the area, and they drove them out. You had one guy that refused to leave, and his house was kind of still there with a chain link fence around it, kind of as a memorial of sorts, as the man who refused to leave Land Between the Lakes. He's the last living resident there. But anyway, there's a lot of heartache and pain in the creation of that recreation area. There'd be stories of the government coming to somebody's house and saying, "Hey, you got to pack up and leave. You got to go," and they refused to give up their house. You know, it's all they had. they go to town, come back, and their house is on fire, and, you know, got to pack up and leave. But for cryptozoologists and those interested in the paranormal, Lamoturna Lakes is popular for a couple of dogman creature that's believed to be in the area, and I thoroughly believe it. There's a lot of people that do, but it's nicknamed the Beast of El Biel. You got a Bigfoot presence in the park, you got a dogman presence, and the dogman tends to be more of a violent creature in that park, and there's been a lot of supposed deaths that have been covered up by the park or officials so the park can keep its good name. But there's been around 18 to 19 deaths or disappearances connected to the creature.
Well, okay, if there have been 18 to 19, over how many years has that occurred?
Since at least 79. The earliest, there was a story before 79 of like a group of kids that, you know, were out and about in LBL or close by, and they were heard screaming, and when the other crew came up and tried to find them, they were all missing, they were gone. So that would be one of the earlier attacks, if it was a dog man. But earliest confirmed one that I can think of would be in 79. Mr. Jody Cook from the North American Dogman Project, you know, the gentleman who worked for Kentucky Fish and Game, he said that he was out in a boat, and I guess it's real early in the morning. There's kind of a fog on the water. He's out in the middle of the water over one of the bays, and he got closer to the shore because he didn't want to get hit by the big boats in the fog. And he said he seen something off in the woods. It looked like a horse standing in the woods, and he's looking at it, and he realized it wasn't a horse at all. It was some sort of canine, and it was looking at this couple that was camping over there. They had a tent set up and whatnot. And he seen them, and he started yelling and cussing at them. Look over there. Look at that thing. And they couldn't hear him, you know. They're just ignoring him. And he was yelling, cursing at him, trying to get him to look at this thing. It stood up on two legs, and it ran and pounced on him. And it held him down with its hands and started biting chunks out of him and killing him. And the guy was so traumatized from this, he said he peed his pants, and he just sat kind of traumatized in the boat. Said, I don't know how long I floated, but when he went back home, he said, I just waited for days and days to see something covered about it in the newspaper or the news or the radio, and nothing ever came. That would be the earliest attack that I can think of offhand. And then in 82, you had the famous story of the family of four that was attacked and killed by a dogman creature. That's primarily what the Beast of El Biel is known for. And there's a lot of variations of that story. It's been told in multiple different ways. But largely it stays the same. A family of four went up there, and a family of four got attacked and killed by something. But there's a lot of deaths and disappearances that are connected to this creature. Whether or not something actually did take them, you know, it has been connected to them in one way or another.
Well, you know, now, Elijah, that's a great story. But when you're talking about around 20 people over a period of 79, 89, 99, 2009, 2019, when you're talking about 20 people over a period of 45 years, is that, and I'm not being devil's advocate, I'm just trying to say, isn't 20 people disappearing over 45 years in the woods maybe normal?
Well, let's be honest. If those people did disappear and get attacked by something, you know, that looks like a werewolf creature, one, absolutely the park would cover it up. They wouldn't. That'd be terrible for business, for tourism. They make millions in tourist dollars and funding and all the other sorts of avenues. But if if we know about around 20 people, then what have we not found out about? Because you always, there's a lot of people who go down there and they'll find abandoned campsites. It looks like somebody packed up in a hurry, or you'll find ripped up tents. So how many people are actually disappearing and we just don't hear about it? Hellbent and Holly, they're a great field research team on YouTube, and they found a couple of one or two torn up tents down there. There may be a lot of people disappearing, and we just never hear anything about it.
Have they found any bodies? I mean, you know, there's disappearance, but there's also murder. Yeah, so have they found any bodies with wounds that would be consistent with something not the usual murder and mayhem?
Well, there was a gentleman from, I think, the early 2000s. He was a bow hunter, and then this is just one example. But his body was found in a place that we've nicknamed Dark Hollow. But his body was partially eaten upon by something. And I do want to play devil's advocate here for a second. There are red wolves. There's coyotes in the park. So something completely natural may have ate on the guy. But supposedly he was drug about quarter of a mile, half a mile away from his campsite, and he was just dead out in the middle of this field. Another interesting story comes from a friend of mine named Martin Groves. He's a former law enforcement officer. He's released a couple of books on the subject, and his most recent one, called A Trace of Death, Beasts Between the Rivers, he recorded a story in there of this sister. Her brother went hiking in a place called the Devil's Elbow, and he disappeared. And I think the cops told her that he had a heart attack or something of that nature. But she got a call later from some officer. I'm sorry, I read it like once. But anyway, it was some person in an official capacity and said that they'd been attacked and killed by some kind of wild animal up there, up in the Devil's Elbow. And John, I can take a picture of that story and send to you later if you want to read it.
I would like to. What is the name of that author again?
Martin Groves. He's one of the most friendly people you'll ever meet. He actually had a very frightening encounter down there in the early 90s. If you can contact him on Facebook, write him and ask him to be on your show, John. He'd be a great guest. He's an awesome guy.
Martin Groves, correct?
Martin Groves, he's a former hostage negotiator, former law enforcement. He's got a lot of credits on him, and he had a really frightening encounter down there.
Well,
him,
that's
his,
great, because I definitely want to ask him to be on the show. I think he'd be great, and he does know you, right?
Oh, yeah, I'll go camping with him and whatnot. He's a real good guy. We're good friends.
Okay, that's great. Well, I'll definitely try to get in touch with him right after this show. I think he'd be an excellent guest. All right, Chris Chastain, your questions, and then the last word is going to go to Dr. Trey Dunaway. So, Chris, what are your questions for Elijah on the Land Between the Lakes?
So my main question is, I'm assuming that you've been to Land Between the Lakes before.
Yes, sir. I was actually camping there about 2 weeks ago. I'm there pretty often these days.
You're what now?
This
I'm sorry,
weekend,
it broke up
I'm not
a little
sure.
Bit.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was actually there a couple of weeks ago camping. Me and my sister went up to a cabin about half a mile, quarter mile off into the woods and camped there. But I'm there fairly often, and it's usually spur of the moment that I go up there. I'm like, hey, Gab, you want to go up Land Between the Lakes this weekend? Yeah, sure. I think I'm going to be actually down there this weekend with some friends up there.
So have you ever gone before and just felt something off, or like absolute, you know, something negative trying to drive you away, or is it normally a really, you know, relaxing experience like any other spot out in nature would be?
Well, I'll tell you this, brother. You know, it could be the reputation of there could be something of a werewolfish nature there, killing people and big hairy creatures and whatnot. But once it hits actually nighttime and you're in those pitch black woods, it gets pretty terrifying at times. I mean, it'll be pretty nerve-wracking being out in those woods. Now, sometimes, you know, you'll just kind of it'll get real calm and it'll be real relaxing in those woods. But a lot of places down there, it just almost has an evil presence down there. It just feels real creepy down there. I was down there one night camping down where the family supposedly got attacked, and it just didn't feel right down there at all. We were shooting the breeze around the fire, and it sounded like something ran up through the leaves behind us and just jumped and just kind of hit the brakes and stopped in the leaves, and we spun around, shined the lights off in the woods, nothing there. And again, it could be just the reputation of the area, too, because, you know, there's a lot of creepy stories that come from there. It could be just the mind playing tricks on you, but it does have a very, very creepy feel at times.
Wow.
Wow.
Just hearing you say that kind of, like, gives me a chill.
And, you know, there's a lot of witchcraft goes on down there. There's a lot of violent crimes. There's somebody's body found, I think, in a box down there, found floating in the river. There's violent people that go down there, and there's somebody a while back down there in a van sort of alluding to kidnapping and attacking women up there, or killing them. There's a lot of meanness that goes on up there, too. Now, at the same time, it's a beautiful place to camp. There's a lot of gorgeous places. And, man, once you catch one of those camping spots right close to sunset along the lake, you can just really kick back and go, man, this is just paradise. But at times, man, it's real freaky down there.
So what you can say is at times there are problems at Land Between the Lakes, right?
Absolutely.
All right.
You're a brave soul, my friend.
Yeah.
Thank you,
well, thanks, Chris, for those great comments and those questions. Dr. Trey Dunaway, the last question tonight on
Elijah. Elijah, you talk about experiences that your family members had and things that you've heard of, but have you ever had any personal supernatural experiences beyond what you've discussed tonight?
Well, in terms of a cryptid nature, I believe I've had a lot of experiences over my life just because, you know, we've been out in the field looking for that kind of stuff. We've had rocks thrown at us before. We've heard and recorded whoops and recorded roars and whatnot. Seen eyes shine before, things of that nature. In terms of a supernatural nature, I haven't ever had a whole lot happen during my life. Visually, I've said this once or twice on the show before. It's really strange, so I don't like to talk about it a whole lot because I don't really know how people feel about it, but it happened 100%. I mean, I can, out of everything on my end, I can guarantee it happened. Where I live now, when I was a little boy, that's probably like 6 or 7 at the time. Me and my sister were down in our backwoods playing. She was climbing a tree and whatnot, and I was watching her climb. Our house where we live, we're down in the woods, you know, we're surrounded by woods, and there's a ditch that goes around our house. But largely we're off to ourselves and whatnot. That day in the early 2000s, when, you know, we were playing outside, I was watching her climb a tree and whatnot, and I looked across one of those ditches, and it looked exactly like a Sasquatch walking across that ditch, you know, and it's looking in my direction. I was looking at it, you know, I was terrified of Bigfoot. That, I'm getting tongue-tied, terrified of Bigfoot at the time because of what we had heard over in Werewolf Springs, Howland. But what was the strangest thing about this was it had a tail that came off of it, came down kind of in a U-ish shape and back up. I hope I'm describing that right. But the end of it was jostling around and shaking back and forth. It's real hard to describe how it was shaking. It wasn't like a rattlesnake, how its tail shakes back and forth. It was just a certain way about it, but the end of the tail was jiggling around, shaking. And I freaked out. I ran back in the house. I left my sister up in the tree, got my mom. I was like, there's a Sasquatch outside. I seen a Bigfoot. We come outside. My sister's gotten down out of the tree, you know, walking back up to us. And I was like, it's a Bigfoot. And she said, it wasn't a Bigfoot. It was a hunter. And that tail you seen was its gun. That was his gun thrown over his shoulder. Now, I know I was a little kid at the time, but you don't confuse big ape man with a rattling tail with a hunter with a gun thrown over his arm. Me and her both to this day will adamantly say what we've seen. If I went in the other room and asked her now what she's seen, she'd say she's seen a hunter. So we both know what we've seen. We've both seen two different things, but things get a little weirder when down the road from us we have, or at least they used to live there. I don't know if they still live there, but back in this time they did. We have witches that live down the road from us. They live off down in the woods. You can't really see what they're doing down there. You know, they had a big gate in front of their house. Had a sign up in front of it that said, Witch Way, W-I-T-C-H Way, property under surveillance and whatnot. And when they'd come out of their driveway, they'd have all sorts of occult bumper stickers all over their car and whatnot. You could tell they were involved in something. And one day we were at the gas station, you know, fueling up the car. And my sister seen that car sitting in the parking lot, and she seen a man getting into the car. And she looked at him, and she realized, that's that hunter that I seen that day in the woods. So those witches that live down the road from us at the time or currently, I don't know, but that hunter she seen that I seen was that creature is the owner of that vehicle that lives on that property. And I don't know, maybe if he's into the occult, maybe he had a familiar spirit that knew I was terrified of Sasquatch and let me see something. That'd be my best guess personally. But, yeah, I still don't really know how to explain it 100%, and that was, that's probably like 2002 or 2003.
But well, Elijah, let me back up a second. So it was the same person, creature, that you saw with the tail with the J in it that was swishing.
Yes, sir.
But you didn't see a tail. You didn't see a tail at that time.
No, I didn't even see the guy at that time. It was my sister seen him at the gas station, but she knew from back then that it was the same person.
And here's a question for everybody, is that in all the sightings of foot, I haven't ever heard of a tail. John, do you have any versions of Bigfoot with a tail?
Only thing
no,
I can think
I have
of
not.
Is like maybe that devil monkey that people talk about, but I don't know a whole lot about that myself.
Well, you know, like we always say, you see what you see, and you're just reporting what you saw. So I'm not disputing the fact that there was a tail, but a tail with Bigfoot, I've never heard
of it. It's unusual. I mean, it's just not a common thing, so it kind of really throws you off.
It's not common, but I have heard Robin speak of one. I believe they called her Trudy, that was a cross between a Bigfoot and a dog man, and I'm pretty sure she described it as having a tail, like a long bushy tail. So not unheard of. I mean,
unusual. Definitely unusual.
It was even weird for me at the time because, you know, I knew what a Bigfoot was. You know, I was terrified of it, but, you know, I like going to the library and getting the books on Bigfoot and whatnot. So I was well familiar with what it looked like, but even seeing it and it had a tail, that always just really confused me about it. But, you know, it's it's kind of interesting to point out as a little side note, we have seen, you know, on family walks going up and down the road because, you know, we use our neighborhood like a little walking track, you know, get exercise and whatnot. We've came through the area before, and they've had, like, today is Beltane. May 1st is Beltane. It's the highest day on the occult calendar. And we've passed by on that day by those people's house before, and they'll have overflow parking. They had, like, ambulance parking, and they had some sort of big gathering going down there on Beltane, but overflow parking and even ambulance parking, that so that was like,
yeah, big deal.
5 to 7 years
big
back,
deal was going
so
on. Yeah,
maybe they're still there. I don't know.
Dude, you know, it's hard to know what some of this stuff is, but I'll tell you what, Elijah, you have been, as usual, a very interesting guest. You've got great stories. You told us about growing up haunted, what you experienced, and also we've talked a little bit about Land Between the Lakes, which we always have to talk about when you're here. So I wanted to say thank you very much for being with us here on ScaryCast on Growing Up Haunted, our special, our special theme topic here. Number one, can you come back?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And thank you all, gentlemen, for having me and being so friendly and whatnot.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
Wonderful stories.
You got great stories, and we really appreciate them. And I'm always excited to have you here. So we're probably going to have you back in the studio in a little bit. Again, it's always fun. And I want to thank everybody, all of our listeners, for being here for ScaryCast. I hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to listen next up at 10 p.m. Eastern Time for Clyde Lewis. Right after ScaryCast. So I wanted to say thanks a lot to everybody. Elijah, we'll see you back soon. Chris Chastain, thank you so much. Dr. Trey Dunaway, thank you so much. And everybody have a great week. And we'll see you tomorrow night with Matt Dell and Kyler Smith on ScaryCast Tuesday. And then Thursday night, we're going to have, of course, from Monster Radio and more Growing Up Haunted. So we'll see everybody this week on the number one paranormal network, ScaryCast. And glad to have everybody here. We'll see you next time. Same bat time and same bat channel. We'll see you and take care. And let's see if we can close this show down. Everybody say goodbye now.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, gentlemen.